This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.
So what's on the docket for today?
Well, I mean, I think I want to talk about, you know, CISA at least releasing some tools to actually be able to help internal IT folks, you know, actually start doing their own assessment. That was pretty cool that they released that a while ago. And it seems like it's still being updated. I'd like to talk about Ubiquiti and some of the whistleblower stuff that came out as of yesterday. And that's the two biggest things that I wanted to kind of address and kind of spitball around a little bit. What would you like to talk about today?
I'm pretty much game for anything. What really is keeping me up at night right now is the iterations made by Reval. They are just getting stronger and stronger, and they're the ones I'm increasingly more concerned about.
Speaking of Reval, I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole for about 3 days with me, at least, you know, but there was, I forget the, it was a no-name ransomware group that I hadn't really heard about through all the incident response stuff that we've done, but there was one that came out earlier this week that said all of a sudden it's going to start refunding everybody back their cryptocurrency that they ever paid in. And
yes,
here's all the decryptors.
That was the group that voluntarily shut down, I want to say November of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them splintered off into other groups. I almost think they're doing that because their group has been breached by a government agency. And by giving the money back, they're hoping, you know, maybe they're not target number one. None of these guys are doing this for the love of hacking. They're doing it for the money.
This is true. That's why it was really interesting to see where suddenly they have a quote unquote change of heart. I'm like, no, this doesn't work that way.
You know what? I've seen and heard worse things, different things. So if people are getting decryptor keys and they're getting their money back, then more power to them. I'm all for that. But yeah, let's kick it off with CISA for you.
Yeah, it sounds good. So earlier this week, maybe even late last week, but CISA had put in, has been putting out a bunch of content on their GitHub pages. And I'll try to add it to the notes after this meeting, if I'm able to. Forgive me. Again, this is Clubhouse is new for me, so we're still trying to figure the ins and outs of how to publicize notes. But if you want to, I know my Twitter is attached to this. So if you want the links, send me a message on Twitter. Say, hey, what's that CISA GitHub page? And I'll happily send it to you. So they are releasing a ton of tools. And one that's really, really interesting is one that you can actually start doing your own internal assessments. You can actually start diving in and figuring out, okay, my company falls under PCI compliance. My company falls under SOX 2. My company falls under whatever your variant is of compliancy. And CISA has put together a template, a starting point, if you will, to actually start going through and saying, okay, my company has done this, my company has done that, or crap, we haven't done this, we need to do it. So it's really starting to arm the internal IT folks, which is a nice thing, you know, that something from the government's actually coming out to be helpful in our space. Because I can't tell you how many times I go into these conversations, they're like, we don't know. Well, you know, your government's telling you now. You got these tools available. You've got the Sparrow. You've got the Chirp. You've got several other ones, some of the latest ones that they're coming out with to help you analyze your Microsoft 365 tenant, starting to look for IOCs, indicators of compromise. All these things, as things are being developed and being put out there, these things are becoming available to, you know, anybody in IT who has a little bit of cloud that kind of knows how to do PowerShell, a little bit of Python maybe, to be able to build this thing out and be able to make their enterprise stronger.
I have a question on that for you.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm familiar with your technical aptitude. I have a little bit, you know, being an IT guy. But does the typical in-house IT team or even the typical managed services provider have the ability to utilize these tools effectively? I mean, the biggest points of compromise are misconfigured tools in general in the SMB space, which is where we play for the most part.
So that's a really good question. And I really think the overall answer is going to be no. They don't know how to properly configure devices. That's why we're seeing breaches. I'm really hoping that me getting on my soapbox for the next 3 to 6 months or even longer if I need to, and start really hammering this thing home to everybody I meet, is to at least get them to start asking questions. I want them to start getting engaged, like, crap, I don't know about these things. Let me talk to somebody who does, so that way I can get these things taken care of. That's really what I'm hoping this thing does. Because without and them educating themselves, they're just open. You might as well just leave your back door unlocked still.
Which, let's be honest, most of the back doors are completely not even unlocked, they're open. The illusion of security by buying all these solutions and just installing them without configuring them, much less configuring the interoperability, is a big issue that I'm seeing on our end.
Yeah, that's kind of a good segue into the next thing of, you know, the Ubiquiti situation that we're seeing, where if you take Ubiquiti and you take the massive solar winds thing, which as of Monday, we're still seeing information coming out about this. And this is a really good point that I want to drive home. People have got to start picking vendors that they feel they can trust. You really do, because, you know, and this, even for me, I'm really surprised by Ubiquiti. You know, they're, even though I shouldn't be, but I'm a huge Ubiquiti fanboy. You know, I'll just put it out there. I like their product. I think it's really good for the SMB space. Their switches are really good. You know, their routers and stuff, you know, it doesn't provide the security, but on a networking level itself, their devices work really, really well. And to the fact that they covered up the whole breach they had, it's come out now that whoever breached them actually had access to their LastPass credentials for all their cloud infrastructure. On top of that, I checked earlier because I am a part of HackerOne, and they do have a formal bug bounty program where they're supposed to disclose these type of things. You know, and the fact that they are still radio silent. So anybody who is leveraging Ubiquiti, you know, I'm not going to be surprised at this moment if in 6 or 8 months from now, we don't see a supply chain vulnerability that came through Ubiquiti, much like we do see with SolarWinds.
I have a question.
And it's just going to take time. Go ahead.
Sorry. So now that we think we know what happened with Ubiquiti, how many people, IT providers or home users, have put 2FA on to their Ubiquiti UI account? How many people have gone through any logs they may have been collecting? And how many people have actually rotated the SSH passwords to get into the individual devices?
I'm going to guess probably 0.1%, if that even that high. You know, it's so there's no 2FA on a controller.
No, but
there's no 2FA.
What you can do now is you can, with one of the last controller updates, you can kill local authentication and only use a UI.com credential that does have TOTP MFA on it.
Oh, I wonder why they implemented that.
And looking back in my crystal ball of the past, I seem to recall that being a thing shortly after the breach was announced, within maybe a month or two.
And this has been a thing that MSPs, IT, and in-house IT have been complaining about for years, because there wasn't even a simple 2FA through SMS available to them. So you're really on the hook of, you know, is my, you know, controller actually secure? And that's why a lot of people went with, you know, this is not a plug to them, but Hostify, which is a pretty big hosting company for unified controllers, but companies like them to actually manage it and hopefully keep things secure. The pretty small little outfit, bunch of pretty cool guys, you know, pretty level headed. So again, not a plug for them, but a lot of people go to those type of platforms in hopes of, you know, keeping these things type of secure. And even they're like, we think we're good, you know, and this may come back to the whole SolarWinds thing. We're still finding out, what, 6 months later, that emails for different branches of the DOD are actually accessed. And, you know, like I said about a month ago, these are things that are going to keep coming out in trickles, you know, for the next freaking year or two. It's crazy.
I think the biggest issue here is you have to really understand that the way we do cybersecurity in this country and just supply chain is very different to Russia and China. They're producing their own computers. They're doing everything for themselves. They're not relying on imports. We do.
Well, exactly. If you go abroad to the Asian part of the world, forgive me for not being geographically astute here, but you go to Japan, you go to Asia, you go that side of the world, they have complete smart cities. And they don't worry about a lot of the stuff that we have to worry about, even with a Ring camera over there, right? So I don't know if it's by design. I'm wanting to say maybe it is, even though I may, you know, upset some people. But, you know, a lot of your smart devices call home to authenticate to a foreign server outside of the country that you have no control over. You know, smart home, Ring, Nest, all these devices go outside of the country to do its registration.
I think if the SolarWinds breach has taught us anything, you can't look at data leaving the continental U.S. as anything different from data going to sources within the U.S. because the points of compromise came from, you know, AWS, Azure infrastructure within the U.S. to get around certain geoblocks. So I think we need to look at who owns infrastructure, who owns certain software that we use, and really understand who we're letting into the wire. That's the issue here.
Well, this brings up a question for you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
So I think this is a perfect segue to something I've been harping about that you probably are very familiar with, but what are your thoughts on complete zero trust of instead of a network and, you know, how to actually implement that in a meaningful manner? Because when you start looking at security, it has to meet functionability inside of a network, right? There's got to be that give and take to some degree, but we got to implement a zero trust as much as possible. How do we achieve that?
I think that really depends on your IT provider. You need a firm or people that are talented and skilled enough to implement it with minimal friction to the user. And I'll give you the perfect example. We know someone who implemented Duo recently. We know two people that implemented Duo recently. One just rolled it out and had headaches trying to get it to work. The other rolled it out in phases, made sure it worked, so the IT staff was okay with it, and then they gradually rolled it out to the rest of the workforce, and there were no issues. Now, what would you say was the biggest difference between those two situations?
I'm going to be on a limb here and probably say planning.
Planning and ability. And I think those are the two biggest things that are missing in our industry. I don't think security is hard. I think security is quite easy. Getting there is difficult because it takes requisite planning and the skill level of people to do it. Not, you know, using restaurants is a big difference. You can go to some of the fanciest restaurants and get the greatest meal you've ever had. It's the same ingredients. It's just their technique is better.
Oh, exactly. I mean, if you, now, I got family members in the restaurant business, and, you know, I've worked, you know, for fast food and stuff like that. And I remember, I mean, my first job ever, I worked at Pizza Hut way, way back in the day. But I would remember the same delivery truck coming to our Pizza Hut restaurant, deliver the dough and deliver all these parts and pieces, was going right across the street to deliver to McDonald's, to deliver to Taco Bell, and to KFC. That was all on a block. Now, of course, that was before Pizza Hut and, you know, Taco Bell and all these guys had their own delivery, but they had, you know, they were using the same suppliers, and a lot of the restaurants used a lot of the same local produce and everybody else.
It's just so like us. They,
I do agree.
I mean, I don't
know. You can put 10 MSPs that have the same RMM tool, and I can guarantee you they're probably configured 20 different directions.
Absolutely. And that goes into the lack of standards in the IT industry. It's hard to put regulations down when there is no standard. And what really gave me a chuckle this week was when CNA announced, or was it last week, they were breached, the insurance company. Yet all these insurance companies want to tell us how and what we should be doing for clients. They can't even keep themselves safe.
That brings up a great point. Exactly. So, you know, they were hit by ransomware and it was announced last week. And you know, as the IT or as a cybersecurity incident response firm, you know, I am personally hoping that insurance companies are going to be our driving force to help mandate and get these companies to a more secure platform without government intervention, right? So if these underwriters and everybody are starting to mandate stricter cybersecurity in the policies that they write, I was thinking that was going to be our biggest thing. But when they can't eat their own dog food, so to speak, I think we may be, now granted, this is just one public incident. And I'll put a big asterisk on that. As an incident response company under NDAs, I cannot advise, I'll just put an asterisk. But that is one public company this year. I know of at least 18 that I've worked with that are not public. So I'm starting to wonder if they're not eating their own dog food, so to speak, I may be putting my trust and hopes in the wrong area.
Very few people eat their own dog food, to be honest. It's just the nature of it, because the same pushback you're going to get from some clients, some providers are going to say, it's just too expensive for me to run that inside. I know you. I know your company. I know my company. I know that whatever we sell, we use. So it's not that we just believe in it, but by using it, you understand the day-to-day ins and outs of the products. But to those companies that are using, you know, certain AV solutions that are that let everything through, it's because they're getting it for a dollar an endpoint. So they are running their business based on price, not on protection. And to go back to the insurance companies, they need a group of technology providers to advise them on what a baseline should look like. And the way technology changes, our baselines should probably change on a near quarterly basis, if not less. I mean, that may not be feasible to roll out to the public, but you can't rely on standards that were built 5 years ago. The vectors increase every day.
Absolutely. And those who are jumping in and out of this room, if y'all have any questions, I think I missed one person putting their hand up, but if you have questions, feel free. Or if you have anything, just put your hand up. I'll bring you up. Nacho, I know you wanted to try to be one of the two idiots here, but if you got anything, just say something. But
If I may, sorry.
Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt you guys, but been following what you guys are saying, and in regards to like the SolarWinds and ambiguity or whatever, I can't pronounce that. I mean, anybody, including both of you guys' companies, can get hacked. It's really bad. We know. I mean, we'll admit it. As cyber, we know that 100% is not theoretical. I mean, it's not gonna work. It just won't work. And she was right. You'd need to up the baseline, I would say, at the very least, a weekly basis based on what everything's coming in. And in regards to the insurance providers, I mean, we all know, at least for those who are after, you know, ransomware attacks, the key is the insurance providers. If you can get to them and you can see the files of all their clients that have, you know, cyber insurance, those are the gold mines, because those are going to pay automatically. And it's the insurance companies that, you know, just causing all kinds of mess, because even they who are not a cyber company in it, they may not have the cyber skills that SolarWinds has or FireWire has. How do you expect them to protect their own system? That's what all I have to say.
Here, I'll add to your nacho, and I'll let Shiva talk. So when you're talking about insurance brokers, and we brought this thing up on another group a couple weeks ago, you know, I am in conversations with certain insurance companies and actual brokers that work for, you know, 10, 15, 20 different underwriting agencies. The problem that they really, really have is when they go to a company and they say, hey, we need insurance. We need, you know, these are the parameters that we want. And yes, we want cybersecurity. They don't know what cybersecurity is. A lot of the policies that are out there will have different variations. So, you know, it may cover your loss of productivity and maybe your PR stuff, but it won't pay out any damages for ransomware payment, or won't pay for a company like ours. You know, there's different things that it will and will not cover. But when the broker goes to 5 or 10 different companies and say, hey, I got a possible lead here, here's their parameters of what they want, that broker goes back to that potential client and says, okay, of the 10 that I queried, here's the top 3 or 4, but 2 of these, you're going to have to answer 200 questions to actually get insured by them. And they're going to cover all of the bases that you want. But these other 2 companies, you only have to answer 10, and they'll cover you about half of the way. Most business owners are going to take the path of least resistance and get partial coverage, some versus none. And that's really where a lot of the problem I'm starting to see come in. But I'll digress, otherwise Shiva knows me. I'll talk for 5 years.
You know, here's the thing. If I were any of these ransomware guys and I got into an insurance company, I'd never crypto them. I would do exactly what you guys just said. Sit, wait, see who has policies, go after them. Because it's a never-ending source of funding, if you look at it that way.
Now, definitely. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, that's what they're doing. They don't encrypt insurance companies. That's the least thing you want. You want that constant flow of customers coming your way.
You know, the issue I have with the insurance companies and their questionnaires is it's all about self-attestation. And self-attestation is the worst thing you can ever do for compliance. But the insurance companies would probably enjoy that because you're saying you have 1 through 50 lockdown. So when there's a breach and they ask you for the things you said you had, they can deny your claim and keep their premium. And it's the same thing when you look at HIPAA. HIPAA is self-attestation. CGIS is self-attestation.
Part of HIPAA and CGIS is a lot of the smaller entities, business entities, it is honestly cheaper for them to pay the fine and move on than it is to be compliant.
Well, here's, you know, that's HIPAA. I mean, HIPAA has always been that way. I don't think they have much teeth behind it because fines can be appealed and then HHS has a good track record of forgetting about that fine and then it dies off. But let's look at CGIS, Criminal Justice Information System. It's supposed to regulate, you know, the local police department to get access to the NCIC from the FBI. Well, it's self-attestation. How many local PDs are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing? I can tell you for a fact, I've seen instances where they're not doing half of what they're required to do. Information or access to these systems are sold or bartered with favors. Again, because there's no logging on these things that they're supposed to have. And that's my problem with self-attestation. I think we need a firm compliancy set that gets audited, like just like a SOC 2 audit. Otherwise, we're all going to be doing the same things over and over. And if you're an IR company, it's great for you because you'll have persistent business. But if you really want to secure the country, secure the supply chains, there needs to be a mass rethinking of how we do things. Otherwise, it's just going to keep getting worse. And I'm afraid this is just the tip of the spear.
Yeah, just let you know, Shelby, your audio is kind of distancing out there a little bit.
No, sorry. My bad. Is that better?
Much, yes, sir. You may want to repeat the last sentence or two.
No, I was just saying that things need to change. We need to rethink how we're doing things. Otherwise, this is just the beginning, and it will get much worse in terms of breaches. And everyone should have the same baseline level of protection. It shouldn't matter if you're a two-person business or a 200,000-person business.
So on that note, because it looks like, you know, not to get overly political or anything like that, but, you know, I know we discussed it before, but we see businesses, you know, essentially getting rid of their offices and doing the quote unquote mobile workforce, if you will, from anywhere in the company or anywhere, literally in the world. And you and I both know at least one guy down there that is, you know, they have clients who are globally now, you know, using that whole global workforce from whatever, but it's really opening up that. So I think, you know, I have my own thoughts on it, but what do you think is going to be the massive uphill from actually securing a business identity who is adopting a national or global workforce mentality?
I think there are two things. People love speaking about, you know, protect the identity. The perimeter protection is dead. Yes, I believe so, because most of our clients are using some form of SaaS. Azure AD, our IDP, is SaaS. But what I'm not hearing is, or what I rarely hear about, is DLP, data loss prevention. What are you doing with that? Azure has Azure Information Protection, and now they have it for the endpoint, which is great. How many providers know how to use it, much less roll it out to their clients? How many providers know how to frame that conversation with their clients?
Well, I'm almost going to say most of the smaller MSPs that are out there don't know, because I was floored about 3 weeks ago. I was on a big Zoom call, and I think I told you about this, but there was four or five managed service providers going around the table in a Zoom room trying to figure out how to do link scanning in 365. And they're talking about all these different programs and all that. I just took a step back and I polled them. I'm like, what version of 365 are you guys all using? And everybody was using at least a business premium. Some had E3, some had E5, right? Not a single one of those had ever heard of Microsoft SafeLink that was built right in. And I was just floored. I'm like, what? You have tools available to you and you're not using it. And on the second part of that, to talk about Microsoft for 1 second, there's a complete compliancy part in 365 where you can start doing your own compliance and see, okay, this is what Microsoft is doing for you. These are some of the other things that you need to do to at least meet these compliances from a 365 standard. I find so many people didn't even know that freaking thing even existed, and their minds are blown.
Again, that goes back to the whole no standards, right? To become an IT provider, all you need is access to the internet at this point. You can buy a laptop for $250 and call yourself an IT provider. There is literally no barrier to entry. And that's an issue.
Credit card, a vendor, and you know, laptop, and you're in business.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the issue, right? It's a lack of education. It's a lack of standards. And despite what has happened in the last year with COVID, people do not look at IT the same way they do as accountants, lawyers, or other cost centers in their business. But if you don't take care, let me step back. I firmly believe every company now is a technology company. I don't know a single company or type of business that can run without technology. And being able to say, yeah, I have an IT guy, that's not good enough anymore. You need a team. You need people with overlapping competencies to take care of your business. And these guys that are going out there and charging what I deem is not enough, they just hurt the industry, because the client will always go for the lowest cost. And then they will complain that they didn't get the best service, but it's the old adage. What is it? Fast, good, cheap, pick two.
Exactly. You know, that goes back to the whole insurance broker reference that I made a little bit ago, where, you know, they're going to take the path of least resistance on getting an insurance policy that may protect them some of the way, but not all the way. So based off of that, you know the certifications that we are going through and some of the stuff that we're doing, but what do you think should be an industry level, at least beginner's guide, to before they even start being an outside IT consultant, if you will?
I think it all starts with knowledge. Have an accredited coursework program to teach the basics and the fundamentals. You can't just go operate on someone. You have to go through med school. And a computer science degree has nothing to do with the real world life of being a network engineer or a systems engineer for cybersecurity. I see all these people here, not in this room, but people on Clubhouse, LinkedIn, everyone now has a cybersecurity degree. I'm sorry, are these things even accredited? And that's why we need some kind of self-regulating body to do this, just like the medical boards do. You want to be a radiologist? You have to go through med school. You have to go through your fellowship. You have to pass these boards. And then every 5 or 10 years, you need to re-up. We need that basic structure before we can do anything. And I remember when I started in the IT business, vendors had minimums for you to buy. Now, vendors have a $50 minimum, which allows anyone to call themselves a provider. Forget MSP, forget ITSP. We're just talking IT providers in general. And we need to work with the vendors for them to up their minimums. Otherwise, it's just not going to work long term.
Yeah, on the topic of the whole the vendors discussion, I feel like I'm talking about, secret chats or whatever, but I know both you and I and many other people are having chats with other MSPs who are having chats with vendors. And we all now, at least our little band of goofballs, if you will, are asking a lot of the same questions. And time and time again, these vendors have come back and like, we never had anybody ask us all these security questions before. And it's like, why? You and me, full disclosure, we're a band of about 5-10 people, that kind of collaborate, offline and stuff like that. But how is it that us, again, I'm not trying to toot our own horn here, but I'm really surprised that it seems like we are the only ones, at least we know of, that are asking some of these major, major questions before we even do a trial with these guys.
That's because just because this room is called Two Idiots, everyone else are a bunch of idiots. I hate to be politically incorrect or whatever. It goes back to they let anyone be a provider. And companies using vendors who have unfettered access to their data and their customers' data, that's a bad thing. But they don't care, because all the MSP or the provider cares about is being able to bill their clients. And, if there's going to be a standard for us, the natural evolution is we should be able to impose standards on vendors for security, for best practices and everything else. We should be able to approve them to come into our area of operation.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just crazy, right? Because, we'll have these conversations with these folks. And, I start playing around and I start finding things. And, some of them love it and some of them get butthurt over it. And
I think it kind of goes back down thinking about it. I'm starting to wonder, you know, the whole acquisition of Rocket Cyber and some of these other companies, I'm starting to wonder if a lot of these vendors that are getting introduced into the IT MSP space are using, you know, the whole E method, if you will, build it up good enough and then dump it and do it over again.
I think so. I mean, no one's getting into business to save the manatees, right? It's about making money. And if you're
speak for yourself, sir.
I'm sorry?
I was joking, saying speak for yourself. I'm not here just trying to save people.
You know, I'm not here to save people. I'm here to do a good job and charge a fair price as I see fit. I see a lot of people on LinkedIn, or I get a lot of people on LinkedIn saying, I can help you do this, I can help you do that. Well, you're not really helping me. What you really want is to take money out of my wallet. So if you're going to do that, I need value. And that's what I hope to provide to my clients. I have a question for you based on this.
Shoot. Go ahead.
And this has been a drum I've been trying to beat. And a lot larger IT providers laugh me out of Zoom rooms for this. Why is everyone, and I mean everyone, not collecting their logs into a SIM?
We try. All we can do is try our best to give the information. If the client follows our instructions, great. If they don't, all we can do is just go through the steps and say, look, we told you to do this, we told you to do that. If you fail to do it on time, and when we tell you to do it, you stand the chance of having an incident.
My question really is, why are IT providers not making a SIM mandatory? Why is there virtually no logging or aggregation of logs and running, you know, even if you're running canned queries against something, not you, but just in general, everything should be logged because you're not going to need it until you do. I guess that's my question.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The logs are the key to everything from a reactive approach to be proactive for the next time. I agree with that. Yes, the logs explain what happened. Unless you have a guy, you know, and these guys that come in for the ransom or whatever, they're not going to get too sophisticated. But some of these, my clients have interesting clients that the logs do matter because they may not want to be part of a ransom. They just want to sit there and look because they gain access to the clients that they have. So yes, the logs are ideal. You are absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here.
The one thing that I want to jump in on here, Nacho, is, you know, you said that the ransomware guys are not very sophisticated. Can you dive into that and explain that? I don't want to make any assumptions on what you're saying here, but I want to see where your mind is at, please.
On that point, I would say, okay, the ransom stuff, we know at the top level, it's a major organization. They run it like a business. We know that. But there is so many parts of it that, you know, average high schooler can purchase the necessary software and use a broker to go ahead and do everything. And that person, that the high schooler, can, you know, socially engineer or just send out use bots or whatever service they want to use, third-party service, to send out the emails or send them out any way they want to be able to infect the machines. They get a percentage of what they hit, but the providers that they use get another percentage. That's what I'm saying. If you're just dealing with the masses, they're not that bright. All they want, they just want to, you know, it's a simple procedure. Just go get as many clients as you can, lock up their machines, get them to pay, you know, and they're only sending out to their list or whatever. The brokers over here on the other end are the ones doing the collection. I'm saying that it's just a whole process. Now, if you're talking a one gang of setup of ransomware people, well, remember, what you're saying is ransomware. You're locking up the system for them to pay. But that's sometimes not really the intent. If you have someone that's targeting a specific organization that has clients that are more valuable than that one client you have, you want to exploit that. You don't want to go ahead and set up a ransomware on that. You don't want to encrypt their data because you want to be able to just sit there and view what they have and see what other customers. That's what I was saying. Like with the insurance companies, if I had my hacker hat on, I would never encrypt that database for the insurance company. I would just sit there, open up my back door, and watch what's coming through see how many clients they're picking up. As soon as each client comes up, go and attack the new client. Every time they get a bunch of clients, set up a timeline, go attack those clients, because you already have the client, because they're providing them to you.
I think I know where you're going. You're just phrasing this in a lot of a different way than I would ever phrase it, but I'll make a tip. So some of the parts, I mean, you're naming parts and pieces of different type of things. So, you know, you've got the RAS, the ransomware as a service, where you've got the main hackers that will build the encryption code, but it's up to the quote unquote minions to go out there and spread the ransomware infection. You have the likes of what was Waze, what was NetWalker, now DarkSide, Ryuku, ReEvil, just all these guys or gals. I don't want to include everybody, you know, but, you know, I say guys loosely, but you have these folks that are actually breaching RDPs or breaching FTP SSH servers. Those are the more sophisticated stuff. And I'm not even talking, you know, we're not even getting into ATP vectors. We're not even talking about nation state attacks at all. You know, this is the common run of the mill ransomware payloads that are being deployed right now that they go in and cause massive damage. They literally will data exfiltrate everything on that network. Just like you were doing the kind of a loose example, if you will, but the example, so to speak, of the insurance company where you're going to try to data exfiltrate, you know, any and all the existing clients, any and all the new potential leads and clients, you know, that's the whole data exfiltration side. And a lot of these ransomware guys are doing data exfiltration because of the simple fact, if you are able to recover your data from a backup through data loss provisioning or data or from data provisioning or not provisioning, revision, sorry, data versioning, you're able to restore from OneDrive or one of these other backup repos, then they want to be able to hold something over your head so that way they can get some sort of money versus no sort of money. I think you're kind of hitting it on the head, but it's a lot more complicated and more sophisticated than what you are talking about, at least from my point of view, because the company that I run, we are penetration testers and we are an IR firm. Like 80% of the business that we do right now is incident response from either ransomware or it's from data breaches or for PCI or whatever the case is, you know, and it's, I think more times than not, thinking off the top of my head here, I think most of them have been RDP and SSH breaches. You know, we've seen some people who actually put IDRAC controller on the public internet, a VoIP company. They had their entire server encrypted.
If I may, so, I mean, I would almost say they deserve that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, IDRAC default credentials. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. But go ahead. Sorry.
There's a much, much bigger problem. There's more of an education. There's more things that need to be done. And it's not just a simple, hey, stop clicking on crap. You know, there's more of a infrastructure security. You know, I think this really goes back to what I was trying to get at was, you know, implementing slowly but surely, you know, this is what Shiv was talking about, you know, doing different implementations was around planning and execution. But I mean, you can't go into a 300 node network and say, all right, tomorrow we're doing zero trust. You know, we're blacklisting everything until you tell me who you are. And that's not going to work. But an office, a small lawyer office, one or two practitioners and one or two legal aides and maybe a secretary. Yeah, you can do that in a day or two easily.
Yeah, it's mainly, I do this. What I do on that is my side gig. You know, I'm not going to take on someone that has more than 20 employees. That is beyond my scope. I mean, I can't do that. Obviously, on my primary job, I deal more than X amount of employees all over the world. But this is just a side gig. And I live in an area that has zero cyber presence. So it's a little monopoly, which is fine for me. But it's just small agencies. The bigger shops are obviously, I'll farm them out and say, look, hey, call this guy. This is what he does. They'll help you out. But I'm not going to be dealing with, you know, big things. These are just people I happen to know. And I can see, you know, I just help them with the basics and try to make sure that they do not have other issues. It is very rare for me to, you know, I've had very few of my clients, and I'm talking less than a handful of my clients in the area that have fallen to a ransomware attack. because at the same time, and I'm a big Mac proponent, and I set everybody on Mac, and I know I'm probably professing that Mac is safe, but no system is safe. It's just that it offers them a little bit more protection, and it allows me to support them on a part-time basis rather than a full-time basis.
Gotcha. Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, everybody just be mindful of what you're doing. You know, talk to your vendors is the best thing I can say at the moment. Anything from you, Shiba?
Get good people who know what they're doing, and price should not be the deciding factor on anything.
Nacho, any closing arguments since you hung out with those two idiots here?
No, thank you for including me in the middle of you guys. And always interesting learning. I'm always trying to learn as much as I can. And you guys obviously have a wealth more knowledge than I do.
Yeah, we all know what we know in our own little versions,
right? I just pretend
to
know something. I'm the village idiot.
I'm the mayor of the village.
All right, I'm just going to cue up the YMCA intro song. Here we go. All right, guys.
See y'all.
So everybody, thanks for joining, and we'll see y'all on Monday. Take care.
Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.